My name is Andreas Zingerle, and together with my partner Linda Kronmann, we work as the Kairos Art and Research Collective. I want to talk about our research project, The Internet of Other People's Things, that was conducted in South Korea. Funded by the Korean National Research Foundation in collaboration with academic and journalist Jonathan Woodia. The research focused on the development of Internet of Things and human-computer interaction in smart cities initiatives in South Korea, corporatization of city governance and citizen science initiatives in smart cities. We investigated these initiatives in South Korea, interviewed local city planners, and organized a summer research lab in Korea's oldest smart city called Songdo. Besides the creation of several artworks, we also published an open access publication where we collected critical projects, essays, and interviews by designers, artists, activists, and researchers on IoT surveillance in smart homes and our future cities. The Korean government initiated several projects to promote IT use in Korea. Following the high-tech economic growth of the 80s and 90s, the Cyber Korea 21 Master Plan in 2001 focused on fostering a knowledge-based economy through quality of life improvements for the general public. The IT 839 strategy was initiated in 2004. Government, industry, and policymakers have focused on ICT-based ubiquitous computing environments such as connected homes and ubiquitous cities, linking virtually everything to a nationwide ubiquitous grid through wireless network and radio frequency identification technology. The stated goal was to create smart cities and a ubiquitous connected society, always connected through the IoT to ensure a more secure, humane, and environmental lifestyle. These plans have been more about the technological design implementation and less about organizational policy and management decisions in deploying a ubiquitous city and the likely fundamental changes of society and the cultural milieu. In 2006, the non-profit organization Korea U City Forum was formed to foster the ubiquitous city proliferation project as a Korea's future economic growth strategy. The membership is dominated by powerful high-tech chaebol industries like Korea Telecom, SKT, Samsung Data Systems, and various governmental agencies. City developers designed to make Korea the world's first ubiquitous nation. Further goals included better communication between the government and the private sector, as well as establishing ubiquitous Korea as a testbed for world-class domestic and international companies. The forum produced detailed plans for the implementation of RFID and ubiquitous sensor networks, but again, notably completely neglected the discussion on possible social issues and cultural problems. Since 2008, the Korean government has invested heavily on the smart city development. Given the current president Moon Jae-in's emphasis on job creation, he promised to expand smart cities into a future growth engine in response to the fourth industrial revolution, creating a Smart City New Deal project, which would provide financing for cities chosen by a contest to testbed new smart city technologies. Despite the UN Habitat's recommendations to city planners to avoid viewing smart cities as final products, South Korea's promotion material presents concepts such as the U Eco City in a box, describing export of smart cities as a flat pack option to developing countries struggling to find local solutions to the ongoing tensions between environmental sustainability and economic development. This follows Korea's desire to be seen as the world's most connected and smart country. The Special Autonomous City of Sejong, built as Korea's new administrative center, it represents a controversial idea to redistribute power, authority, and urban development away from the dominance of Seoul metropolitan area, one of the largest in the world, with more than 25 million people, more than half of the country's population, and half of its businesses. The intention remains to build an alternative center to Seoul, with ongoing plans to relocate almost 40 ministries and agencies to the city, as well as building apartments for a population of 500,000 people by 2030. Seen as another testbed, an IoT-ready city built from scratch with autonomous smart transport to a social credit system called Green Bean, providing an ideal platform for future technology. The finalized city is a commodified city, where everything is taken care of for the idealized and happy citizen. Happy people sharing happiness in the best global city where everybody dreams to live. To fight the declining population in South Korea, they advertise the city as the city of children and women, with the highest birth rate in Korea of 1.67 children per family, more than double that of Seoul. The oldest smart city is Songdo, part of the Incheon Free Economic Zone. Situated close to the Incheon International Airport, the intention was to create a new hub for the Northeast Asian regional economy to compete with established international financial centers in the region, such as Singapore and Hong Kong. Songdo was designed to build and built by US developers, Gale International. The Incheon Free Economic Zone Agency is a government authority, but privately owned and funded. Gale International owns 60% of the project, Korea's steel company POSCO owns 30%, and Morgan Stanley's real estate owns 9%. It was advertised as the first truly smart city, a car-free world with 40% green space and dozens of kilometers of cycling routes. Technology is ubiquitous. Korea's opportunity to showcase its smart city in a box export drive. Due to the 2008 financial crisis, many companies never came to Songdo. Even today, walking through Songdo gives you a Chernobyl-like emptiness. The city is less than a quarter full, with just 70,000 residents, an odd mixture of wasteland intermingled with random large-scale development and real estate speculations.
I'm going to talk about our artistic research as we take a closer look on smart city PR material. Asking, who is planning these cities? How are the future cities imagined? Who are the ideal citizens? And how are smart citizens shaping their living environments? As more and more rural communities continue to urbanize, a sustainable development depends on the successful management of urban growth. People are moving to cities to improve their life quality. As Jürgen Renders outlines in his book 2052, A Global Forecast for the Next 40 Years, we will reach the limit of world population by 2040, and through urbanization will experience a decline towards 2050. Still, urban population will grow, and we are in need of more cities than we have now. Hence, many countries start building completely new cities from scratch. This has many advantages. New policies can be put in place. Workarounds of existing problems such as traffic, energy shortage, or the relocation of existing communities can be avoided. New cities create a seemingly utopian blank slate to tackle challenges such as climate crisis, pollution, overpopulation, and declining natural resources. Governments cooperate with the private sector, who become deeply embedded in planning future smart cities, shaping their identities, and providing hardware infrastructure to fulfill modernist urban utopia. According to Saskia Sassen, such a transformation has deep and significant implications for justice, democracy, and rights. Smart city in itself is a fuzzy term. Tech companies such as IBM see it as the manifestation of the Internet of Things, instrumented, interconnected, intelligent. Sensors are used to generate data that can be communicated, integrated, and analyzed to enable some aspects of city life to function more efficiently. Network provider Cisco offers digital network architecture, the Cisco DNA, to unlock the urban network full potential to proactively manage communities. In our artwork, Future Past Still in the Making, a multi-channel video installation, we try to further decode the visual and rhetorical language of smartness. So, we are going to look at some material from the installation and discuss it through four themes: the city as a final product, sustainability, greenness, and cleanness, the ideal smart citizen, and the citizen that are shaping their living environment. For the Future Past Still in the Making, we collected over 50 PR videos and 3D renderings from scratch city initiatives in Europe, Africa, Middle East, and East Asia. Typically, smart cities are promoted as financial hubs with special zones for residential living, commerce, and industry. It is clearly determined how different spaces will be used, shaping the identities of neighborhoods and the city as a whole. For example, the King Abdullah City in Saudi Arabia offers residential zones that feature a wide range of housing solutions, sustainably designed in a perfect, modern, family-friendly environment for its residents. And each different community offers its own tailored architecture, blending first-class accommodation with the latest technology. In many cases, in order to accomplish imagined massive urban development, governments partner with the private sector to create special economic zones with pro-business policies. Stakeholders in such partnerships are often real estate speculators, energy suppliers, or tech companies who also provide the hardware infrastructure. The cities are also often marketed as gateways with ideal geostrategic position. For example, Songdo in South Korea, that promises a future where we will stand at the center of the world. Or marketed as free economic zone, offering unmatched support and freedom for business. The King Abdullah City wants to establish itself as a hub for world-leading businesses who bring with them their best and brightest talent. The finalized city is a commodified city, where everything is taken care of for the idealized, happy citizen. As in the case of the new capital Sejong, happy people sharing happiness in the best global city where everybody dreams to live. To fight the declining population in South Korea, they advertised the city as a family-friendly environment with the highest fertility rate in the region. Despite the UN Habitat's recommendation to city planners to avoid viewing smart cities as final products, the PR material presents the city as one solution fits all, an international hub, sustainable, green and clean, happy, safe and secure. Some central topics of sustainable urban planning is to create a green living environment and to provide alternative modes of transportation to reduce cities' carbon emissions. These issues are also tackled in the promotion material that we reviewed. However, following up on development plans reveal that underdeveloped land often ignores that the project itself damages fragile ecologies or displaces disadvantaged groups. In India, there is a plan to build 100 new smart cities, making them citizen-friendly and sustainable. One of them is Aramavati, promising green open spaces, waterways, enough solar energy to power a fully electric public transportation system, and every major building following sustainable building guidelines. In contrast to this sustainable utopia, environmental campaigners, local farmers, and civil society groups ran petitions against the plan, addressing the environmental damages and the displacement of local farmers this would cost. The World Bank took this protest serious, reinvestigated the local government's commitments, and concluded that the government misrepresents facts, did not involve local communities, and made unrealistic promises to secure the loan. As of September 2019, the World Bank dropped further funding and main constructors withdrew from the project. This is not always the case. South Korean Songdo, with the newly established LEED for Cities, which is short for Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, certificate forced over 4,000 fishermen to relocate. And as wetlands were destroyed, a diverse population of endangered water birds, fish and plants lost their habitat. Songdo's status as a LEED certified city is to some degree dependent on their automated vacuum collection of waste. However, when visiting Songdo, we encountered an obsolete waste disposal system. Standard trash bins were installed, big waste bags fixed on trees appeared in public spaces, waste was recycled manually by elderly people, trash trucks mowed through the city during the nighttime, and the residents are still paying for non-functioning green tech in real estate prices. As visitors in South Korean smart cities, it was made impossible for us to get rid of our trash. We had to take it with us or throw the trash next to the non-functioning bins, where residents' trash was already piling up. Such idiotic encounters disrupt the seamlessness of everyday lives in smart cities and unveil what lies behind the noble words such as sustainability, greenness, and cleanness. What the smart eco-city in a box concept fails to recognize is that the development of a sustainable city is a process that is never finalized. When analyzing the smart city PR material, we were also introduced to the ideal citizens, well-educated internationals who are successful white-collar workers with perfect work-life balance and enough time to consume in nearby malls and to take part in a range of leisure activities. The smart citizen are the sensing nodes of the city, always connected, generating valuable data that is used to predict and control the future behavior. An ideal smart citizen has nothing to hide because a smart citizen is also a surveilled citizen. Under the concept of smart cities, the surveillance industry has found its playground. By becoming a resident of a smart city, one consents to the automated gaze. Hence, we decided to hand over one of our research questions to be answered by machine vision. We were curious to learn how various facial and emotion detection applications would answer the question, who are the smart citizens? Here, ideal citizens are analyzed by three different facial recognition applications. When watching it for a while, it becomes easy to imagine that such technologies could be abused in several ways. What is concerning about AI assessing a person's character from their outer appearance is that it lays the basis for scientific racism. With artificial intelligence, we have entered a new era of researchers claiming they are able to recognize, for example, criminal faces or are able to detect gay people. Companies like Faceception are already implementing this type of research when developing surveillance technology. Despite the darker sides of such surveillance, the branding of smart cities links technology and innovation to happiness by, for example, naming cities as the Happy City Sejong or in their happiness agendas as the one from Dubai, stating, as we transform the future of Dubai through smart technology and innovation, we have prioritized happiness as our primary goal. Asking machine vision applications to define who smart citizens are is, of course, absurd. However, perhaps the goal of being the happiest city on earth and measuring happiness based on appearance is equally absurd. If emotions can be really measured is debatable. However, emotion detection is already applied in AI. For example, South Korea hiring bots evaluating job seekers. In the video, A Perfect Place to Grow, we documented how garden hacking by grandmas and grandpas flourished between the skyscrapers in Songdo. This because building projects were postponed due to various reasons. During our summer lab in Songdo, we visited several of these allotments, learning that urban farming in those places is illegal. As we were filming one of the green spaces where a hospital was supposed to be built, the gardener, an elderly man, invited us to taste some of his sesame plants and chilies. This felt like the smartest part of the city. Local food, green spaces, in sustainable use by its citizens. When rather invisible elderly smart citizens claim their presence in the city through illegal farming, this becomes a political act as they claim rights to the city rather than protection of property. Even if smart cities are promoted as final products, a city will always be incomplete, an ongoing changing process that will never finalize. Hence, the actual citizens, even if considered powerless against corporations and government, will find ways to shape the city. In this case, the culture of gardening by elderly Koreans is shaping the city, both by claiming private property and repurposing the space. In the complexity and incompleteness of a city, Saskia Sassen sees the capacity of cities to outlive far more powerful but formal and closed systems, such as governments, kings, and corporations. Here also lies the possibility of making the urban, the political, the civic, a history. In other words, the possibility to shape the city. All in all, Future Past Still in the Making demonstrates how a smart city utopia are never realized, and yet they are important in stimulating change. Furthermore, as the cities are populated by real citizens, they start to shape the city. Hence, the city evolves through an ongoing changing process and will never be finalized. And we will see a short smart city mashup from the installation.
This land was once ocean. The ocean became land, a city in harmony with people. One day,
when it's complete, King Abdullah Port,
Amaravati,
Masdar City,
Sejong,
Songdo,
a city built entirely from scratch in South Korea.
For tomorrow's Saudi Arabia,
global gateway into Africa,
the most distinctive city in the world.
This ambitious project,
which will become the tourist center of the world.
An investment and a free zone.
A self-sufficient city.
And sustainable city of tomorrow.
Perfect modern family-friendly environment. The perfect location for new educational institutions.
There will be 200 million square meters of accommodation and more than 2 million workplaces in all activity areas.
Together, we are taking another step toward the future.
The future is smart.
In the future, we will stand at the center of the world. A beacon of hope and promise. People are now living in this city. Their hopes for the future are great.
Bringing the power of the Internet of Things to make cities smarter.
Is the people's capital. At the forefront of a nation's mission and a beacon to the rest of the world.
A European city of the future. Become a resident.
Yeah, wow. We have now some spare time for Q&A, for questions and answers. And we also have Andreas Zingele, the one part, the male part of us here in the studio. Sort of, be careful. My name is Andre and his name is Andreas. So let's keep it apart that way. Hi, Andreas.
Hello. Hey, good afternoon.
Tell me, Andreas, as a first question before we get what happens in the internet. They say that in Asian countries, the attitude towards individualism is a bit different. Now, I don't know about Korea. I've never lived in Korea, but I've been to China and I've lived there. Mm. And I know that the Chinese have a completely different attitude towards social responsibility and the individual right, enlightenment, and, you know, Hobbes, Locke, Hume, and all that jazz is less implanted there than it is here. Is that, would you subscribe to that? And the
Yes, I would agree. Also in Korea, we have seen very similar structures in the way the family is very important, and also a certain social responsibilities is very different to Europe in a way. Yeah.
And the argument always goes that all these digitalization and all the counting of people and the structuring of modern societies along a digital way is a lot easier in Asia. Not only do they have the infrastructure for it, but also they have a different set of minds so that they can handle this differently. Would you subscribe to that view?
Yeah, well, on the one hand, well, what I would say is a key element is that most of these countries are very very young democracies, and through that it's easier for big corporations to get a foot in and to become quite powerful team players with the local governments. And as we saw in Korea, it's easier for them to then set foot in a free economic zone, deploy their technology citywide, nationwide. And so, I would link it to the fact that democracies are very young. And of course, the economic factor is very important for them to be able to economically have a progress and flourish, to cooperate with big industries and to give them these demo cities and demo test beds that they can try out things. Yeah.
Yeah, we have a question from this internet out there, and it links right up to what we were just talking about. The question is, I have to read, hang on. Excuse me. Who's planning all these smart cities? Is this done by the government or by governments or private organizations?
Yeah, well, hard to say in one answer, but for example, what I was talking about in the presentation also, there was an open core, you can say, that cities can hand in their applications of what smart city initiatives they plan to do. And then there is a national jury board that then sees what do they want to get further with, and which of these projects are being then chosen and linked up with some industries in order to realize them. So on the one hand, there is a government behind it who is planning it, but within this government or within this, like in the 21st century Smart Korea board that was funded, there are a lot of J-bars, so a lot of the big corporations in Korea are represented in these boards also, and they also choose then which of these projects are getting realized. So partly the government, but to a big part, the corporations are represented there. Yeah,
the so-called Chibul, this uncloaked thing. It's a very secretive family, government, business all wrapped up in one.
Yeah.
Could you try and make a prediction on how this development will change the global society? Do you think it will have an effect, and how much and how far outside Korea?
Well, about the impact, of course, like you're dividing society even more. It becomes more and more a class system. Who lives within these cities and who is working for bigger R&D facilities, and who is then more the service person to it, or the janitor of these cities, or of these citizens. What we see in this PR material is that it's always advertised to a certain elite of people who then live in this city happily. So I think in that way, it will have a global impact of segregating societies even more. I think a lot of these cities that we were looking at are still in the making, as the works also say. So I think it's important to continue to look at the developments and to see when these cities are actually finalized and not just a utopian, dystopian dream. How then they are getting, how many people live there, and how the development is. Are these visions and dreams that are now portrayed also becoming a reality? Or does it get halfway stuck, like we see in Songdo, where through a financial crisis, no one was ever moving there, really?
Yeah, picking up on this democracy thing and the internet. If democracy goes digital in a sort of transparent way, that means if I don't have a proper internet connection, I'm out of democracy. Is this a topic in Korea, and how do they handle it?
Well, the smart cities are always advertised as connected cities, and for sure you will have internet there. That for certain, and since everything seems to be connected, you also become a data point. So I think not being connected will not be the option.
How do Koreans handle this permanent, is somebody looking over my shoulder? I'm not quite sure if I would be comfortable. I mean, I'm not comfortable with it here, but it's way not that netted as in Korea or in Asia general.
But I think in Asian, especially Korean society, it's not so much discussed, because you're part of the innovation. You're at the forefront of innovation. So let's try out these things. And like they see themselves more as at the forefront. So why should we be against this? Or even if they just trust the government and the industry way more, and see also their personal gain through it, through the economic acceleration and the higher living standards. That's they agree on it. So
Wow, they trust their government. You gotta be kidding. Yeah.
If the government, let's say, if the government promises economic stability or economic growth, then this is definitely something they want to hear. And as long as this this constant growth happens, they are quite happy with the situation, and also with the chaebols, these big conglomerates that run the country more or less. They see that there is a big corruption, but also on the other hand, it promises their stability, not just in, like globally, but also within the East Asian region.
Actually, one of their former presidents, I think the second to last from the current one, went to prison today, finally, as far as I gather from the news, that the Supreme Court has reneged on his appeal, and he's definitely going to prison. Does that do anything to the people? Does that make them feel better? Sorry, we're sort of a bit off topic here.
What was your question again? Does this make...
When Koreans see actually people from on top going to prison, does that influence their attitude?
This is now rather fresh information, so I'm not very aware of it. But when there was the impeachment process of Park Geun-hye, I found it very interesting to see that over weeks, people were demonstrating in the streets. All the demonstrations were peaceful. No one got killed, or the demonstrations were not taken down by force, by the police. So for an Asian country, I found this very interesting, that also this peaceful impeachment demonstrations were actually allowed by the government, by the police, and not forced down.
Okay, last question before we close. A question from the internet. Is the term smart cities not a better marketing word for surveillance? Because we have in smart cities a lot of cameras.
Yeah, not just a lot of cameras, also a lot of other sensors that profile you. Definitely. I don't see much smartness in it. I see more surveillance in it as well, yeah.
Okay, so it's more of a dystopian thing. It's not utopian. Or would better laws or some internal, when we agree on how to use this, would that help?
It would definitely help if it would be more open source, if it would be more able to look into what is built there, how are we tracked, if the whole process can be done more openly or with citizen engagements, that people can be more a part of it. I don't know. Most people also just want to live in a city and not want to build it up from scratch and be part of all these decision processes. I think in Europe especially, we see more processes that are from grassroots movements or small citizen projects that make the city richer and smarter. So I think that would be the my personal utopian dream of a smarter city, to have more citizen engagement and more a community-driven open approach to it.
Okay, this brings us to an end of this presentation. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Andre.